They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The future of the FCC, the future of the internet, and a history about money and the song Louie Louie. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. This Supreme Court term wraps up this week, and the coming days will feature arguments in some interesting cases. Today, it's Lucia versus the Securities and Exchange Commission. You need to know that the SEC has its own judges. Now, on its face, the case is about whether judges within the SEC should be political appointees, but it's about a lot more. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams is following this.
So these judges are called administrative law judges, and at the SEC, they do things like take evidence, issue subpoenas, even make initial decisions on what punishment someone should get. Now, those decisions have to be approved by the actual SEC commissioners, but the person bringing the case to the court is arguing that because these administrative law judges are acting like, well, judges, they should be appointed like judges. Right now, these judges are hired by the Office of Personnel Management, same as other bureaucratic positions, and people can only be fired for cause. Now, what's interesting about this case is that the Trump administration is backing the challenger of the SEC, basically saying, yeah, the White House and cabinet members should be able to hire and fire these judges, meaning they could change from one administration to the next.
Kimberly, thank you. Let's check the live markets here. The FTSE in London is down 5 points. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are mixed to little change. Interest rates remain interesting. The 10-year Treasury yield is up to 2.98% now. First, there was the internet. Then there were so-called net neutrality rules to keep internet companies from offering VIP treatment to favored business partners. Then there was the Trump administration and the move to repeal network neutrality. Well, today is the very first official step to unneutralize the net. But advocates of net neutrality are still fighting, as Marketplace's Aaron Schrank reports.
A quick roundup of the pushback. Internet companies and digital rights groups are suing the FCC, arguing the repeal was illegal. In the U.S. Senate, Democrats say they're just one vote short on a bill to restore net neutrality rules. And several states are pushing their own net neutrality laws. Barbara Van Schuick at Stanford Law says California's proposed law is the most promising.
That's the only state-level bill that comprehensively restores all of the protections that were adopted in 2015.
The FCC's new federal policy explicitly preempts any state law, so ISPs are closely watching what happens in California.
Kind of like auto emission standards, you know, California sets the tone for a lot of the country. Same thing might happen with net neutrality.
Mark Bartholomew is a University at Buffalo law professor. He says when net neutrality rules do fully expire, you might not even notice.
The major ISPs promised they won't change anything in the short term. They said they won't block or throttle.
Because they know pretty much everybody's watching. I'm Aaron Schrank for Marketplace.
Just as you count on Marketplace for reliable, in-depth news and information, we're counting on listeners like you to invest in what we do. The more people who support Marketplace, the more that we can do to raise economic intelligence across the country. You'll reap the rewards every time you listen, knowing that you're helping Marketplace make people smarter about the economy and why all this matters. And here's the thing. Your donation now will be matched dollar for dollar when you give today, thanks to a generous challenge from our friends at Candida. Become a Marketplace investor at marketplace.org. And thanks for making a difference. On Marketplace, we like to say there's a money story hidden under anything. certainly famous songs, there's a new podcast called Lost Notes that explores these backstories. My ex-colleague, reporter David Weinberg, took on that one as the first of the podcast series.
That is the version that was recorded by the Kingsmen in 1963. It's the one that was the most popular.
But not the original version.
No, it's not the original. The original was written by a guy named Richard Berry, who's from Los Angeles. He wrote in the 50s, and it's a very different song that he wrote.
So sure enough, the black guy's version isn't the monster hit. It's the white guys from Portland, Oregon, who have the monster hit some years later.
What's even crazier about it is that their version is really quite terrible. It's a really bad recording. They're teenagers. They didn't know what they were doing. The lead singer was singing into the wrong part of the microphone. He comes in too early on a verse. And so you would expect for them to do another take, but this record producer, the guy who was running the session and paying for it, was a cheapskate, and so he said, that's it, we're done, let's just, on to the next song.
How does it break out of the Pacific Northwest?
This radio DJ in Boston named Arnie Woo Woo Ginsburg, he picks this song out, and he puts it on, and plays it, and calls it the worst record of the week, and people love it. I mean, and because the lyrics are so unintelligible, and you can't understand what they're saying, all these kids get it in their head that the lyrics are dirty, that they're about sex. And so they write down what they think are the dirty lyrics. They pass them around. And eventually, their parents start finding these lyrics and start complaining to their elected officials. The governor of Indiana steps in, and he bans it. And it works its way up to Hoover at the FBI at the time, and he launches this FBI investigation that lasts 18 months.
So wait, this is a money story. Heaven knows what the FBI paid to try to investigate this thing.
Oh, my God. Definitely way more than the man who wrote the song got paid for it, I can tell you that.
Well, I want to get back to Richard Berry, who wrote this song and had a small hit with it in the 1950s in that other version.
Yeah, he fell in love with this singer named Dorothy. They wanted to get married. He wanted to get her an engagement ring. And this guy is offering me $750, which is a decent amount of money at the time. And so he sold basically the rights to a handful of his songs, including Louie Louie, for $750 to buy this ring.
All right, we need to inflate that, though. $750 in the early 60s in today's money, 2018, $6,280. So not nothing.
Yeah, no. He fought to get that and thought he had done really well. He didn't know what was about to happen to that song.
Lost Notes, a new podcast from KCRW about some of the stories behind some of the greatest music. David Weinberg is a reporter at KCRW. David, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Weinberg used to sometimes work the early shift with me on this show. By the way, he tells me there really is an F-bomb deep in the mix of the Kingsmen version of that song. I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.